Oh God, I love you guys. It's, you know, it's funny. As often as I get to do this, if it's a captive retreat where you got 180 people show up for the retreat, and you got 180 people that are staying there on the grounds to do the deal. You have 180 people in here on Sunday morning to do a workshop deal. If it's a deal like this where people got to drive anywhere or even get up to go someplace, they just don't do it. It's like. I'm hip to the whole concept and idea of sponsorship and working with others and doing all this other kind of stuff, as long as it doesn't require that I do anything except sit in a meeting and do nothing. It's just, I just want to share. I don't really want to do any of that other stuff. How nice for you. But I'm always, you guys are automatic hero status in my book because you're willing to get up and just take the chance that there might be something here that we could learn. You guys that I don't know, you gotta know from my story stuff that I come from a place of total arrogance around AA in the idea that, yeah, I'm batshit crazy, I'm a nutcase, but I'm not really willing to do what you do. I'm not really willing to look at anything else. There's this veil of contempt that's in front of me that keeps me from addressing anything that might be a different idea about Alcoholics Anonymous. Last night when we were talking about this stuff story-wise, and we talked about this deal about me being crazy and suicidal and really, really unhappy at 7 years into this deal. I'm 7 years from my last drink. I'm 7 years from my last outside issue, and I'm just so miserable. I just am twisted around the axle about everything. I hate you, and I hate your ideas, and I hate my kids, and I hate my beast of a wife, and I just... hate you. Am I the only one that ever felt like that? Am I the only one that just, I can't stand who I am, but the thought of doing what you do to get where you are is just distasteful. I just can't, because it's going to demand that I do a couple of things that I don't really want to do. It's going to demand first that I have to admit that I don't know everything. And I think maybe, guys, in the light of day, that may be my biggest stumbling block. I just have to admit that I don't know everything, and I don't want to do that. I've been sober 7 years, you see. I know all this stuff. Oh my God. And it took an old guy that loved me enough to rub my nose in this stuff and to keep asking me a bunch of questions. And it's just like, at one point I remember asking Cliff, I said, Cliff, do you always have to ask so many questions? And he said, the more questions you'll answer, or the more questions you'll ask yourself, the less I'll ask. But until you get into a habit of asking yourself the questions, because if I don't ask questions, then my ego takes over and my arrogance takes over, and I put myself in a position, because my ego wants me to be in a place where I'm really comfortable in my own skin. And so I can sell myself the bill of goods that I know everything I need to know to stay sober. I may not be one of them real intelligent gurus, but I know enough to stay sober. And that's the story that I'll sell myself. And that's the place that kept me in ignorance about what this big book was about. And more importantly than that, more importantly, it kept me in a place of ignorance around this thing called sponsorship. If we started right here and asked Steve-O what his experience was with sponsorship, we talked about this a little bit last night, and we went around the room. Everybody in here, God bless you, everybody in here would have a different idea about sponsorship, wouldn't you? Because we base our concept of sponsorship not on the big book, but we base our concept on how we were sponsored. I'm sponsored a particular way, and so that's the way I'm going to sponsor. My first sponsor was a kumbaya kind of guy, and it was a touchy-feely kind of deal, and we'd read a lot of spiritual stuff, and we'd sit around and we'd talk about lofty ideas, and and that was it. And so when it got time for me to start sponsoring guys at 6, 7 years sober, God, that's what I want to share. That's what I want to do. And some of you guys are in the same kind of situation. I run across it all the time. And there's nothing wrong with any of that except sitting around talking about stuff will never get you from point A to point B. It may make you feel better for a moment or two. See, guys, the weird part about this stuff is that we want to treat Alcoholics Anonymous like it's therapy. AA is not now, nor ever was, therapy. It is not. The confusion here is that sitting in a meeting, in a discussion meeting, may be therapeutic in nature, but it is not therapy. And so the illusion that we're sold, this bill of goods that we were sold, is that we can sit in a meeting and we can recover just because we're there. Guys, that's like saying that I can become a parent by just going to a PTA meeting. It doesn't work. I mean, how many PTA meetings do I have to go to be a parent? A lot. I may never get there. You see what I'm saying? And it's that same kind of bizarre thought process around this deal. Let's ask ourselves a couple of quick questions here. Turn over to page 14 in your big book if you brought them. Yeah, we see them. Yeah. All these guys that got them this morning, yeah. Very bottom of that page. This is the genesis of Alcoholics Anonymous as we know Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, while I lay in the hospital, the thought came that there were thousands of hopeless alcoholics who might be glad to have what had been so freely given me. Perhaps I could help some of them. They, in turn, might work with others. Now, my friend had emphasized the absolute necessity of demonstrating these principles in all my affairs. Particularly was it imperative to work with others as he had worked with me. Faith without works was dead, he said, and how appallingly true for the alcoholic. For if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. If he did not work, he would surely drink again, and if he drank, he would surely die. Then faith would be dead indeed. With us, it is just like that. I love the next three lines. My wife and I abandon ourselves with enthusiasm to the idea of helping other alcoholics to a solution of their problems. My wife and I abandon ourselves with enthusiasm to the idea of helping another alcoholic. Well, that's fairly powerful stuff, guys. Look at your own experience in leaving meetings. Go to meetings, leave meetings, go to meetings, leave meetings. How long has it been since you left a meeting enthused with the idea of helping somebody? Sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't. Guys, I went to a lot of meetings, a ton of meetings, and I never left enthused. There were a lot of times I left a meeting wanting to drink really, really bad. I don't know what it was about those meetings the last 7 years I was at that group. I just used to get really thirsty sitting there. I just, damn, come on, guys. But I didn't know. See, part of the problem here is that we bring into this deal a bunch of preconceived ideas about sponsorship, right? Let me ask you a question. If right now we said, Kelly's new meat. Well, Kelly's brand new in here. She's just sitting there like this, and we're all going to sponsor Kelly, okay? Now, if Kelly walked up to you after a meeting and she said, would you help me with this work, what's the very first thing that we do? Every one of us seems to go, shoot, and I shoot to a four-step. God, there's another 8 hours out of my day. There's another, and I've got all these preconceived ideas about how much time it's going to take to get Kelly through this work. And we do this over and over and over again. That's the reason why those guys I was telling you about last night, these guys with 22 years sober, that have all those cats, 100 years of sobriety, and they've sponsored three men between them. And when you ask them why, they'll come up with all kinds of excuses. You ask them again, and they'll narrow it down a little bit. You ask them again and say, no, I'm not satisfied with that. I want to know the real reason why. And the real reason why is this collection of men with over 100 years of sobriety are afraid to sponsor because they really don't know what they're doing. That's one. And two, they have a preconceived idea that sponsorship takes too much time, and I don't have it. I don't have it. I'm a busy guy. And guys, I'm telling you, I run a business. I have three daughters. I have a wife. I've got other interests I'd like to do. And when somebody approaches me in those first 7 years, that was my deal. My head took me to a place I'm going because I'm buying into all this stuff. I have to sit knee to knee with this man and read the big book to him. And then we got to do this step stuff. And then it's going to take all this other time. And then I see this painful road of sponsorship that's going to take me out there a year. And it's just going to be a, God dang, I don't. And then he's going to leave anyway. Hell, he doesn't really, you know. And I've got all of these things going on in my head telling me why I can't do this thing. Let's get one common baseline, and then we'll start this, okay? If the quote that I read last night about Bill Wilson talking about there's no such thing as a personal interpretation of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, if we use that as a beginning point for our discussion, then the next logical assumption would be, well, if there is no such thing as a personal interpretation of the 12 steps, according to Dr. Bob, then we gotta get a baseline here someplace. We have to have something to go from, and that's the reason why they wrote the big book. The big book gives us the baseline. The big book sets the common solution that we were supposed to have. In theory, guys, and I don't know if it always works like this, but in theory, every one of us in here should be sponsoring exactly the same way. There's nuances of this thing. There's vague differences, but the bare basic nature of how we sponsor and what we're supposed to do should follow the same form and function. Why is it that we walk into groups and we got one guy over here says he can take you through the work in a month, and you got a guy over here going, oh, no, no, it takes at least 3 years to work this work. I've had conversations with guys that go, you can't effectively sponsor but one man at a time. That's it. And until he dies or gets drunk, you can't sponsor anybody else. And he'll defend it to his dying breath that that's the truth. Where he got it, I don't know. I keep saying, please show me this. If we're going to agree that the baseline is the basic text, then show me where it says that. Let me read you something. You'll get a kick, I think. Look at this. I broke 3 pair of glasses this weekend. I had one just fall apart. I stepped on one, and I'm down to my Seeds and Stems glasses right here, and I just go, if this breaks, then I don't know what we're going to do. There are a lot of dope fiends in here today. This comes out of when AA comes of age. It was soon evident that a scheme of personal sponsorship would have to be devised for the new people. Each prospect was assigned an older AA who visited him in his home or in the hospital, instructed him on AA principles, and conducted him to his first meeting. But in the face of many hundreds of pleas for help, the supply of elders could not possibly match the demand. Brand new AAs, sober only a month or even a week, had to sponsor alcoholics still drying up in the hospitals. Yeah, take that. I want to pimp slap that guy. This is crazy. This is the truth here, right? These guys, a week sober, are sponsoring people. Because the need is there. I got news for you. Statistically, they tell us that for every one of us in here, there's 40 of us out there still drinking and dying. The need is still there. Okay, so we're assuming that every one of us the common thread that runs through every one of us is that there's underlying fear about sponsorship, right? Can we all agree on that? I don't know of anybody that's a sponsor giant that just says, I'm not afraid ever. Guys, I'm telling you, I've sponsored hundreds of men in 19 years, and I'm telling you right now, I'm still a bit anxious sometimes about the process. It is a big commitment, and there's something more, I don't know how to explain it. There's just something deeper about it. It's just you have this little skinny, scared buckaroo that 2 weeks ago was drunk or hanging off the end of a crack pipe, and he's looking for somebody to help him see truth. Is it my wisdom that helps this guy? Not in the least. It's my ability and my willingness to let God work through me to get connected to this guy that helps and changes everything about that relationship. And the relationship does indeed become spiritual in nature. It's a heady kind of a thing. This is not me stepping into guru pants. I'm going to be the guy. It's not that like that. It's me submitting to a very humble process and let God work through me to help this guy do that. And it's after you've experienced it from 2 different perspectives, I'm assuming that everybody in here is sponsored like I used to sponsor. I step into the guru pants and now I'm the one that's going to be. And I see this far more. I see this, that attitude, than I see the one of what a humble gift that God has brought me, this chance to be a part of this new drunk's life. That perspective is much healthier, and it seems to work much better in trying to get these cats through the maze of the work. The biggest single problem in sponsorship, guys, is that we have a preconceived idea of the stuff that we were just talking about, and it's undaunting. Somebody said one time that this in this same conversation, it later turned into a fairly like a bloodbath. But the when these guys were trying to defend this issue of you can only sponsor one man at a time, and I asked him why, and he began to explain what he does with his guys, and I'm going, where does it say you're supposed to do all that? I'm not clear on that stuff. Go back to page 59. Let's start looking at the little path of information that can help us see some stuff. On page 44, we read the stuff last night. Let's go to 44 first. The part about the preceding chapters, we've read all that stuff. If you've learned something of alcoholism, we hope that we've made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. In early days of AA, this is the very first place that they brought these guys when they came in. Kelly just walks into the room and she's shaking and she's vibrating and she's a fruitcake and she doesn't know anybody. She's scared spitless. one of the strong women in the group would sashay up next to her and sit down and say, "Sweet pea, let me get you a cup of coffee and let's talk for a minute." And we talk and we find out, and she says she's a drunk, and we talk and we get it. I don't take Kelly's word for it that she's a drunk just because she says she's a drunk. We're not there yet. But at some point in time in the evening, I'm going to scoop Sally. I'm going to pretend that I'm a girl now. Why do I get myself into these things? I could have picked anybody in the room, and I pick her. I'm going to pretend I'm a girl for right now. I'm feeling very pretty all of a sudden. So here's the deal. At some point in time in the evening, I'm going to get next to her, and I'm going to say, "Hey, let me ask you a couple of questions. Why do you think you're an alcoholic?" Now, put your finger on this thought. Mainstream AA is now just, "What are you doing? You can't, you don't have no right to do that." Oh, yes, I do. It is my responsibility to do this. And this is the first barrier we need to break down, guys. If you feel like this is just take a deep breath, relax. We're going to talk through it. This is the first barrier that we need to bust open. We have every right to question her reason for being in that room. She's sick. She's insane. She's a fruitcake. We don't know what's going on with this little girl. She may have all kinds of other problems to do. We need to find out where she is. We're not trying to be intrusive. We're not trying to be exclusive. We're not trying to bust her chops about anything. We're trying to, in absolute, clear, unadulterated love, we're trying to ask her a simple question. "Why do you think you're a drunk?" And she's going to tell me, "Well, I got this DWI, you see, and I blah, 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 and my husband kicked me out, and I know, Kelly, but that's drama stuff as a result of this other stuff. Let me ask you a quick question." And you flip over in your big book, and you take them to page 44, and you read them this first paragraph. "We hope we've made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. If, when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or when drinking you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. Classic Bill Wilson, no gray area, black and white. This is the question to ask. Have you lost the power of choice and control? If you say, I swear, honey, I'm never going to drink again," and then a week later you find yourself back at the 7-Eleven with a tall boy in your hand, you've lost the power of choice. If you tell your husband, "Listen, I'm just going to have one drink with the girls down at this place like this, and then I'll be right home to put that hairy chicken leg in the oven, and dinner's on, we're going to eat, okay?" And then you find out that you had a 12-pack or a 6-pack down there at that place, you've lost the power. The physical part took over, and you've lost the power of control. That is it. I don't care if you've been in jail. I don't care if you've been raped. I don't care if you've been molested. I don't care, and neither should you. At this stage of the game, we don't care. All we're trying to do is make the distinction of what this kid is. Is she an alcoholic or is she not? Maybe she's just a heavy drinker. Maybe she just needs to go to get a good therapist and talk through some issues. That's what we need to find out. In the early days around the traditions, that's the way that was a tradition 3 in the short form like this. They touch about the only desire is a desire to stop drinking. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. Read the long form of that, and it's a lot clearer about what we're supposed to be doing. But the important part here is to understand that from a historical standpoint, they didn't let people come sit in our meetings and twist and turn for weeks and months to years, unsure about what they were. Just because they're here, remember, guys, your experience will bear this out, won't it? Your experience will show you that sitting in meetings with people, there are people in there that aren't alcoholic. They got a DWI because they drank and drove, and a judge said, "You need to go to AA." So they're here, but they're not alcoholic. They don't drink alcoholically. They just screwed up. They just got spanked, and they're here. Are they welcome? Yes. But we need to make the distinction and understand, because the way to work with her is to get her into therapy or get her into church or get her into something else. We don't want a non-alcoholic sitting in the meeting talking about stuff she doesn't know anything about. I'm not a dope fiend, guys, and I have no business sitting in an NA meeting goes, "Oh yeah, I know all about shooting dope." I don't. I don't know anything about it. That's the reason why I need to know with this little girl when she comes in. When Kelly's here, I need to know what she is. Can I relate to Kelly? Can we identify? I tell her a little piece of my story. She tells me a little piece of her story. We do this little paragraph, and I have a pretty good idea. I'm not labeling her drunk. I'm not labeling her an alcoholic. She's going to make her own distinction. She's going to, at some point, she's going to say, "I drank just like you, Myers. I did. I guess that means I'm an alcoholic too." See, she I'm helping her make the decision. She's one day in our fellowship, and she already knows what she is and who she is. And this is good. This is excellent. Because from this point, we can make a great beginning to go through the rest of the work. Guys, let's look at this room real quick. Sponsorship is like raising kids. How many of you guys have kids? Any of you got little kids, big kids, anybody? But at some point, okay, right. Now, picture this situation. You got a one-year-old kid that just learned to walk. And you're standing around this kid. And this kid walks this way. And I'm like that. I'm right over there with her. I'm back over here. I'm checking. No. I got my arms around this kid. I watch everything this kid does to make sure that she stays real close like this. Now, as this kid gets older, I'm doing less and less of this stuff, and I'm instructing. I'm standing back going, might not be a good idea to touch that stove. See? What'd you learn from that? Ah, the stove is hot. We don't touch the stove, okay? And see? And we're just teaching these little lessons like this. Now, by the time we get this cat up to high school, we better be ready to go like this. We better be ready to just stand back and watch this young adult walk free and clear. If this kid at 17 years old is still walking up the stove going shh like this, we have a problem. We have something we need to do. It's called incarceration, or we need we just need to shore up some loose ends on this stuff, right? We need to make sure but that's exactly the parallel that we're running with kids, with guys that we sponsor. They come in and they're new, and we're holding them real tight, and we're just kind of, God, they're little kids, and we got to make sure that everything, but quickly, as they begin to learn, we begin to let them grow and grow and grow. Your reliance, Kelly, as and me as your sponsor, is your reliance is not supposed to be on me forever. Your reliance will be on me for about that length of time, for about that much time. And within the next couple of weeks, we're going to work through this work, and gradually your reliance is going to drift upward to the God of your understanding, or downward to your God, wherever it happens to be. But it's going to be not me. I'm not God. Neither is the group. I'm not that person. And I don't want to be that person. And it takes a great deal of the anxiety and the fear out of sponsorship. I am not in control of your life. I'm simply there to do one thing. Flip over to page 59. Or page 60, where it reads, the step 12 is. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, period. A clear-cut Bill Wilson classic declarative statement. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of sitting in 90 meetings in 90 days. It didn't say that. Having had a spiritual awakening of sitting in ad nauseum discussion meetings, it didn't say that. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these 12 steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics. What was the message we were trying to carry to the alcoholic? That we had had a spiritual experience as a result of working the work. That was the message, guys, and that, and with the stuff that I read last night. That's why we're here, is to carry that simple message. Now then. But as a sponsor, I'm supposed to help him with his legal problems. Oh, are you? I don't see your law degree. I'm supposed to help him with his medical stuff. Oh, are you? Fascinating. I didn't know you'd gone to medical school, Dick. I mean, just don't get me started on this stuff. Sorry, I get carried away. I am sorry. It just kills me though. But don't we do it? All sitting there on the room, and we're all sitting there holding hands, and we're all sitting there all warm and fuzzy, and somebody brings up some medical problem, and now we're all going to solve the medical problem. We're going to jump in with this, our opinions and ideas about why you should be off those antidepressants. If you're doing it, stop. Stop. You're not a doctor. The two most freeing things I've ever learned in AA is, I don't know, and I'll have to get back to you. Because guys, I don't know what it is, as we step into sponsor pants and all of a sudden we think that we have to know everything. We don't. And we won't. And there are 1,000 things that are going to come up. I don't know how to help you through your deal about being molested. I don't know how, guys. I've not been molested. I got some great therapy friends that I know. I got some great guys that are, I mean, they're therapists going broke everywhere. They need the business and they're qualified. They can help you with some of this stuff, get past some of these issues. But this deal of sharing that kind of crud and then expecting a sponsor to clean it up, it's tall stuff, guys. It's tall stuff. My job is to, as quickly as I possibly can, get you to a place where you can have a spiritual experience sufficient enough to bring about a recovery from alcoholism. I've sponsored as many as 50 men at one time. Could you start 50 men at one time and get them through the work? I don't think so. I don't think there's anybody that sharp. I don't think anybody's got that kind of time. But could you sponsor for a 5-year period down at Homeward Bound? I was sponsoring. I was hearing 3/5 steps a week. 3/5 steps a week, and there ain't no telling how many hundreds of guys that we worked through the work during that period of time. And you can do this stuff real easy. Once you get the extraneous stuff, once you get all the goofy stuff and peel it off the tree, you got a stick there in the middle like this of what you're supposed to be doing. The rest of this stuff is just stuff that you've shouldered. Pretty soon you got all, you're shouldering his burdens and your burdens and everybody else's burdens. And we're not made for that, guys. And God never intended for us to do that. That burden is God's. That burden is God's. It's not yours. And there's a great deal of freedom in understanding that, not from an intellectual standpoint, but from a gut standpoint, to know that it's not my responsibility to help you with all these other problems. I can help direct you. I can help do the things that are necessary. And you guys are hip on that. I mean, sometimes we just bite off way, way, way too much. And it's no wonder you don't want to sponsor more than one guy at a time. I understand that. Over the years, I've sponsored hundreds and hundreds of guys. I have no idea how many, but many hundreds that I've carried through the work. And I've never, we talk about fifth steps and inventory, and I've never ever had one go more than 2 hours. Let's talk about this a second, because it seems to be that the very first place that we go when we talk about sponsorship is inventory. I don't want to sit there for 8 hours while this guy dumps all of his stuff on this thing. Let's clarify something real quick. I did 2 fifth steps before I did the one that I did with Cliff Bishop this last time. And I've done some inventory stuff since then, but I'm talking about big primary inventories. And I've done journaling. I've written out my, just write out your life story. Let me explain. There's an inherent problem. The Big Book gives us a great description of what the inventory looks like. Inventory is not confessional, guys. We'll be doing some confessing during the whole thing, but if you think it's just about confessional, just go find you a priest someplace and read the stuff to him. Just go tell him what the lowdown is. The book was real clear that what we were trying to do is see the exact nature of the mistakes that we made. We're trying to find character defects that we've allowed to grow in here. Guys, let me explain something. I wasn't born selfish. I wasn't born a bigot. I wasn't born with all of these defects of character. I learned these. I honed them from the time I was a little kid in short pants. I honed all these things. And what we're trying to do through the process of this inventory is look at the exact nature of that stuff and try to figure out how to get clear of that. Once we identify it, then God can take these things in 6 and 7 and get them out of there. But we have to be able to identify it first. That's the reason why I think the inventory process is so powerful. It's like, could we go to church and just pray about it in a vague nature? Well, I did that for a long time. I'd go, God, please. I just sitting in a Sunday school class, and I'm going, God, please make me a better man. And it's funny. Years later, I look back on that experience, and I wonder, I seem to think that God must have been sitting there going, God, Myers, what the hell does that mean? What does just make you a better man mean? You see? But when I came to him with an inventory that said, God, guess what? This is painful to talk about, but I just realized that I'm selfish and self-centered to the core, and that I'm dishonest, and that I'm inconsiderate, that I step on other people, that I cause all kinds of problems, that I'm prideful, that I'm boastful, that I'm full of arrogance, that I'm full, all of these things that I illuminated as I'm going through this stuff. Please take each and every one of these things from me. And it seemed to be like somebody had stuck 220 right up my little rear end. I just went, and it's like, it worked. The connection got made and all that stuff got removed from me. It was just an amazing process, but I had to identify it first. One of the greatest problems we run into, guys, around this thing about inventory is that we let these guys go too long on this stuff. Now, I know a lot of you guys have had powerful experiences in inventory, and you'll say, well, my inventory was 8 hours long, and it was just a beating. And some people do have long inventories like that, but let me tell you what my experience has been. You can agree or disagree. It doesn't make me any difference, guys. Trust me on that. The inventories that I used to do with guys that went 8 hours long are no more effective than the ones I did that are an hour and a half long. The difference is that in the former, I just let you talk too much. That was the realization that I made.
Yes, this is about talking. Yes, this is about sharing stuff. But guys, let me tell you something. Well, remember in the book, at the very first part of the four-step stuff, when they're talking about that, they liken it to what? A commercial inventory, didn't they? A commercial inventory. And a commercial inventory is like this. Milk, sour. That's the commercial inventory. It is. I mean, that's where we're heading with this thing, right? It's like, what you want to tell me in the inventory is, well, you see, we got this milk in, and then the coolers weren't cooling right. And, well, actually, wait a minute. Let me back up a little bit. What really happened is that the guy that delivered the milk was late getting here with the milk. So we had 2 days' worth of milk sitting right here, and then the cooler did its deal. Like, and I'm going, well, stop. Fascinating stuff you're telling me there, but I don't give a rat's patootie about the date guy being late delivering the milk. It means nothing to the inventory. What means something into the inventory? Milk, sour. We got to get rid of it. Milk, sour. It's not good. I got pulled over by a cop and got a DWI. I didn't, but you hear this on 90% of the stuff. I resent the police department because they pull me over drunk. And then he wants to go into this big, long story of what happened. See, I'd had this particularly bad day, and I got off, and I went to blah, 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 and I'm just going off. And as sponsors, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You're doing this, and you're just kind of looking at your watch going, fuck, please, kill me now. I don't give a rat's patootie about your debacle with the law. I don't care. You were where you weren't supposed to be, drunk. And that's it. That's all we need to see. I just stop. Fascinating. Let me ask you a question. Were you drunk in the car? Uh-huh. That's all I need to know. I don't need to know anything else. Next. And then we whittle these things down. It all goes back to the thing. The fourth column stuff is pretty simple. They're asking four things, and it just snaps into place. There it is. And we ask about hard things to this. I want to know, you know, whose yaha did you touch? And I want to know some details about the stuff, the things you're going to take to the grave with you. But, you know, we're not going to spend a bunch of time on this stuff. An hour and a half inventory is plenty. And I've done, guys, with 60 pages of inventory in an hour and a half. They're still sober today. They're still kicking butt and taking names. They're still doing the things that they needed to do because we cut through all of the stuff that takes all the time. Listen, the golden rule, the absolute carved in stone cosmic rule book stuff around inventories with sponsors and proteges is this. If your inventories are going too long, you're letting your protege spend too much time justifying his bad behavior. It's as simple as that. Because that's all he's doing. All he's trying to do is justify why he did what he did. Don't let him do it. Wrong is wrong and right is right. And that's all we're trying to illuminate on this stuff. We all good so far? When you go back and you look at the historical data, you go back and look through Clarence Snyder stuff, most of these things went 45 days, and they were through the work. What pains me is that most of the places that I travel to, most of the guys a year, year and a half sober still haven't worked the work. They're still floundering. And because of the stuff that we read last night, the stuff on page 24 that we won't be able to bring into mind with sufficient force, the pain and suffering of even a week or a month ago, that stuff... there is some urgency here, guys. There is some urgency. The dead last thing I want you to do is come in and be comfortable in AA before we start the work. I want you to come in and be so uncomfortable and so much in pain sitting in the room that you're willing to be motivated to do the work. Because remember the stuff we talked about last night, pain is the only thing that'll make you do this work. If you're comfortable in your own skin, you'll trivialize it and you'll set it aside. You will. So in the big picture thing, I know people say, well, they work these guys through the steps way too fast. Says who? Based on what? If you're not working guys through the work fast, it's because you're not really sure about what you need to be doing about getting them through the work is all there is to it. And there's nothing wrong with that. Just go back through and look at it from a slightly different perspective and pay some attention to what you're doing, and you can get them through the deal. My guys, I'll do this and we'll close this thing down. My guys, they come in, we meet. Kelly says, will you help me? I says, yep, sure will. We sit down. We spend 30 minutes. In 30 minutes, I qualify her, get her through step two, unless she's got some real problems with it, get her on her knees. We do step three, and she's up standing there. Three. We got 30 minutes, 40 minutes max in that first meeting. I give her some information about the four step. She leaves me ready to do the four step. Kelly, sweet pea, you have exactly 7 days to 10 days to do this. Let's set a date right now. next Tuesday, that's 7 days from now. Okay, 7 days from now, we'll meet right here at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and we're going to do this inventory. Kelly shows back up. She's got the inventory. 2 hours later, we're through with her inventory. She gets up. We sit in the meeting for a bit. She goes home. She does 6 and 7 that night by herself. Next time she comes back, She sits down with me with an 8-step list already written out. We sit there and go through the 8-step list. I help her move it around. So all the money stuff over here, all this, we're not going to get involved in the stuff. But it's a 20-minute conversation. I know some of you guys are going, but when do you read the book? It didn't say that we were supposed to read the book to get them to the spiritual experience. The book has got a great deal of stuff in there. But her experience is going to be based on the action that she takes, not the intellectual stuff that she garners. You see what I'm saying? It's a different kind of a deal. You can get them into the book if you want to. I got no problem with that. You can ask her to read the book too. If she's wanting to do this thing, she'll be motivated to do that anyway. But that's not the important part. The important part is that you're keeping the blowtorch right up against her little butt. She's motivated to do the things that she needs to do. And then as she does this stuff, I'm not putting a limit on the time it takes to do the amends. That's between her and God. I'm just there to make her accountable. Kelly, next time we sit down together, I want to look and see what you've done amends-wise. I want to see where you are, and we want to keep. There's a momentum to an amends process. Once it starts, it needs to go. You'll end up with some straggling stuff out there that you're going to have some trouble cleaning up. I understand that. I'll help you with that as much as I can. While you're doing that, you're doing 10, 11, and 12. Kelly, Friday night, we're going to go to Homeward Bound, and I'd like you to come out there with us and sit in the meeting with us while we're doing the deal. Kelly's now 2 weeks sober. She's sitting in a meeting. She's doing the stuff that she's supposed to be doing. She's pretty much through the work, and she's sitting in a wind-up joint. I said, Kelly, after the meeting, see that little girl over there that's been crying the whole meeting? Why don't you go see if you can talk to her a minute and tell her what's going on? The little girl that's crying over there that's detoxing doesn't care a whit about me. I'm just a crusty old guy from Texas. What that little girl wants to know is, can I get up in the morning and not obsess about drinking and drugging? That's what she wants to know. And Kelly has the answer. Kelly's 2 weeks from her last drink. Kelly can walk up and say, you know what? In the morning, you don't have to drink. This is what I did. Kelly's 12-stepping this little girl at 2 weeks sober. And the miracle happens. The miracle happens. Will this little girl over here get it? I don't know. It's not my deal. But Kelly is on the path. Kelly at 2 weeks sober is a part of and a bona fide member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Fully aware of what our responsibilities are to Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a price to pay to be here, guys. There's a price to pay. There is a responsibility when we're here. It's not a free ride. The book was real clear on that. Bill Wilson wrote a whole chapter on working with others. Chapter 7. Trying to get us to understand that once we draw a sober breath, we're supposed to look out there. We're supposed to look to the next guy to give him what had been given us. And that miracle is the most powerful thing I can offer. Will Kelly have bad days? Yes. Will she be goofy at times? You bet. But when she calls me, I'm going to say, Kelly, that's interesting. I know. How about you go down to the 24-hour club and sit with a drunk for a while and get clear of this? Well, you didn't just listen to what I say, and I'm having relationship problems. I said, I understand. I heard all that, Kelly. I'm just telling you like that. We'll talk about the relationship stuff a little bit later on. Right now, I want you to go to 24-Hour Club, take you a couple of dollars down there so you can buy a cup of coffee to that little girl that just came in off the street. Dig? Kelly goes, I dig. I don't care what she says or does to me. I don't care. But the reality of it is that what Kelly's going to do is what thousands and thousands of us have done. She's going to walk down there with her teeth all gritted, and she's going to walk in and she's going to buy a cup of coffee for some little gal, and they're going to start talking. And 10 minutes worth of conversation is going to stretch into an hour conversation, and Kelly's going to say, see you later, sweet pea. I got to get back to school. And she's going to turn around and walk out of the room. And when she walks out, she'll be what, as Bill said, curiously lifted up. And she'll get on the cell phone and she'll say, Myers, I don't really remember what it was I called you about this morning. I say, Kelly, I know that. I know that. Bill understood. Bob understood. These cats were dead nuts on about what they were going to do. Somebody told me one time that they were bored in AA. And I always go, bored? How can you be bored watching one miracle right after another miracle? You take little screwed up messes like Dustin Barnes that walk in here like this and sit down and do the work and get... I'm just telling you guys, could any of us have fixed Dustin?
No.
Uh-uh.
No.
Only God could fix Dustin. And only a fellowship and only strong sponsorship could keep Dustin's goofy head out of the way long enough so he could do the work, so the miracle could happen in his life. And that's our job. And as you watch this little army of buckaroos rise up around you, you'll understand how cool it is. And you'll sit there at the end of the day and you'll just go, oh, I know that an observer to my life from the outside would look at my life and say, Myers, I think your life is pathetic. You know, I don't really care. All I care about is that I can sit on the edge of my bed at night and I can hear this woman next to me breathing that I absolutely adore. I can't wait to be in the same room with that woman. And I'm going to sit there and I'm going to listen to her breathing for a couple of minutes and I'm going to thank God that for the first time in my pathetic life, I know exactly what my primary purpose is. My primary purpose is to carry a message of recovery to a bunch of sick little knuckleheads out there that don't have a clue that there's a solution to their problem. And I do. I do, because it was given to me in a set of, literature in the first 164 pages of this book. It was clear and concise, and I could understand it. And more importantly, I could transmit it. I could give it to somebody else, and they too could walk free and clear of this stuff. Nothing is cooler. Nothing is cooler. The only thing that's missing from this picture is you in the trenches with us. You ever see these guys out on the street with, you know, like ditch diggers like this? They're like, you'll have five or six guys standing up there with clipboards and they're like this, and there's one little Mexican guy down the bottom of that ditch down there like that, digging this ditch like this. I'm the little Mexican guy in the bottom of this ditch. I am. And I keep going, come on, guys, I need somebody in here with me. And another guy will drop in and another guy will drop in. But what we need in AA is fewer people with clipboards pointing fingers and giving direction, and more people in the ditches, in the trenches, carrying a message of recovery and hope to the guy that we assume that everybody that comes into our room knows exactly what it is, why they're there and all this. They don't. And guess what? There's hundreds and hundreds of thousands that will never, ever even make it to our rooms, dying out there in St. Paul, Minnesota tonight because they simply don't know there's another way to do it. We assume that everybody knows AA's here. But they'll come when they're ready. No, they won't. No, they won't. They'll die tragic lives and they'll kill everybody around them that they know. It's a horrible bloodbath out there, guys, and we need every one of you in the trenches with us helping us do that. For those guys I stepped on, I'm sorry. For those guys that disagree with me, I am sorry that too. And I'll spend as much time as you want to talking about those issues and this kind of stuff, and we can do that stuff during the workshop. Thankfully for me, they've gathered up some guys that are far smarter than I am about the steps to come up and help with this, and it's going to be so cool. And I thank every one of you for letting me come do this. Thank you.